From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. President Trump's decision to end DACA, his predecessor's order protecting from deportation young people who were brought to the U.S. as children, has been met with legal challenges from several states. Maryland has joined one of the challenges. Attorney General Brian Frosch tells us what's behind that suit. Plus, how are DACA recipients coping with President Trump's decision? We hear from Baltimore City Public School teacher Jose Torres and from Amy Elvira Maldonado, who came to the U.S. when she was eight. She describes her reaction to the news.
It frustrates me and it confuses me and it leaves me in a place of uncertainty, because what's going to happen once, you know, my DACA does expire after I renew it?
It's On the Record after today's newscast.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch is joining three other states suing the Trump administration over its decision to end DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. The DACA executive order by President Obama in 2012 allowed certain immigrants who had been brought to the U.S. as children or teens to attend school and work legally. DACA did not provide lawful immigration status, but for the period of the permit, 2 years, beneficiaries were protected from deportation. Of the roughly 800,000 people covered by DACA, often called Dreamers, about 10,000 live in Maryland. In a few minutes, we'll speak to one of them and to a teacher who advocates for young immigrants and DACA recipients. But first, Attorney General Frosch joins us on the line. Welcome back to On the Record.
Thanks, Sheila. It's good to be with you.
So tell us about this lawsuit. What arguments are you and the other states making?
Well, when you say to somebody, give us your name, your address, your parents, your phone number, your social security number, and we won't chase you out of the country, that if you then turn around and try to use that information against the person, that's unfair. And that's the essential argument that we make. First of all, these are children. They're folks who came here when they didn't have the ability to make a decision for themselves. The decision to come to the United States was made in some cases when they were so young they weren't even aware that they were moving from one place to another. And in all the others, in a situation where they didn't have the ability to make a decision, it was their parents or relatives who made the decision. And one of the things about the DACA program is you have to maintain your law-abiding status in order to continue to be eligible for it. So these are people who are in school, who are working, who contribute to our economy, who contribute to our community, and it's unfair, after having induced them to identify themselves and give us that information, to turn around and then say, okay, now that we know who you are, get out.
U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said that DACA amounted to, quote, unilateral executive amnesty, unquote.
Well, it was far from amnesty. It was a continuation of their ability to stay in the United States. It was an assurance that we were not going to deport them. And it was within President Obama's authority to make that determination. But when Attorney General Sessions and Donald Trump turn around and say, ha ha, you gave us the information, now we're using it against you, that violates fundamental fairness.
But it seems to me there's a distinction between using information on file with the government to search out DACA recipients and just saying, we're not, after a certain amount of time, we're not going to honor these permits you have.
Right.
You won't be able to have a driver's license under this permit or get a work permit.
Right. I'm sure the administration will make that argument at some point. they have not given any assurance that they are going to ignore the information that they've received or that they're not going to use it for enforcement purposes. But the fact is that the policy is inhumane, it's un-American, and it's against our economic interest as well. These folks, the DACA kids in Maryland, pay about $41 million in taxes every year. They add to our state's gross domestic product to the tune of about $500 million a year. Most of them are employed. Many of the rest are in school, and they're not hurting anybody. They're contributing to society. So it's a bad policy. It's also unfair, and we believe illegal.
That's Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch, a Democrat, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about President Trump's decision to rescind DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, and the lawsuit that Maryland has joined to challenge his move. I want to pick up on some of your points about the economic impact. There's a huge range of think tanks and analysts who have reported that ending DACA would hurt the U.S. economy, ranging from the Cato Institute on the right to the Center for American Progress on the left. You tweeted last week that ending DACA would cost Maryland more than $500 million annually. What's included in that?
So, well, that's the gross domestic product. That's the value of the work that they do, the money that they spend, et cetera. The number that we got from the Center for American Progress, but as you say, the Cato Institute and other think tanks have come essentially to the same conclusion.
The Cato immigration policy analyst David Beer wrote, quote, "It is not illegal to work without authorization, but it is illegal for employers to hire someone who lacks authorization," close quote. So will ending DACA hurt Maryland employers?
Well, it could. It obviously increases the jeopardy that they might find themselves in if they hire somebody who does not have a green card, does not have work authorization. It certainly hurts these individuals. And you know, when people don't have an opportunity to work, to earn a living, to contribute to society, they are more likely to get in trouble. And I think We've got folks who are contributing. Why would we want to turn them into a threat as opposed to a benefit to our communities?
But some people would say, look, if one president can put an executive order like this in place, doesn't the next president have the right to rescind it? It's an executive order. It's a presidential order. It's not a congressional action.
I think there are circumstances in which that could be done, might even be done properly, but not the way Donald Trump has done it or proposed to roll it out. And as I say, I think it's bad policy. There may not be a legal remedy for every bad policy that the Trump administration puts in place, but in this instance, we believe that what he's done is illegal.
Well, another issue that General Sessions raised was that a similar executive action by President Obama aimed at deferring the deportation of undocumented parents of U.S.-born children, American children, was halted by federal courts. Sessions was making the point that DACA could be vulnerable to the same circumstances, that the whole thing was legally untenable. How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, I think he's wrong. The Trump administration has declined to let that issue play itself out through the courts, and we're going to force that issue by having filed suit. We're going to let the court determine whether President Obama's order was legal and whether President Trump's order rescinding it was legal.
What advice would you give to Marylanders who are currently covered by DACA, who are uncertain about what this means for their work permits, their driver's licenses, or their ability to attend college?
Well, part of the message is we've got your back. Keep the faith. We're going to do everything we possibly can to make sure that you can remain here and contribute to our country and to our state. I hope these kids don't give up hope. We want to keep them, have them continue to be productive and contributing members of society.
Thanks for talking to us about it.
Thank you.
Brian Frosch, a Democrat, is Attorney General of Maryland. Quick break now on the record. When we come back, what impact will ending DACA have on students in our region? We'll hear from a Baltimore City public school teacher and a high school graduate who's currently covered by DACA and working to save money for college. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. President Trump announced last week that he would rescind his predecessor's executive order protecting young adults brought to the U.S. as children from deportation. This program, known as DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, will end in 6 months, although some beneficiaries will be able to apply for renewal. Congress now has a brief 6-month window to take action on immigration reform. How are those currently covered by DACA reacting to the news? How are students in Baltimore reacting to the news? I'm joined by Jose Torres, who teaches at Falstaff Elementary Middle School in Baltimore City. Torres has also taught high school and at Baltimore City Community College. He's a member of Maryland TESOL, an association for teachers of English to speakers of other languages. Welcome to On the Record.
Hi, Sheila. Thank you.
And also with us is Amy Elvira Maldonado, 20 years old. Amy moved with her family to Baltimore from Honduras when she was 8 years old, and she's a recipient of DACA. Thanks for being here, Amy.
Thank you for having me.
Jose Torres, what reactions have you heard from students and parents?
A lot of confusion and a lot of anxiety. I think this puts people, especially DACA recipients, in a very nervous position because they don't know the outcome. They don't know where this goes. Well, you know, what does this really mean? And this is a hard question to answer.
Amy, what was your reaction when you heard the news of President Trump's decision on DACA?
So I was working, so I didn't really get to see it live. But when I got out of work and I was driving to my second job, that's when I put up, you know, the news. I started, you know, Googling what was the announcement, what had been the announcement. And as soon as I found out, I started crying, and I was crying all the way till I got to my second job.
Tell me about these jobs. What was the job you were leaving and the job you were driving to?
My first job is an office assistant in a school, and I work there from 7 a.m. till 3:30 p.m. And then my second job, I work as a server in a restaurant from 5 p.m. till closing, which is around 12 or 1 a.m.
And these are jobs you can hold because of your DACA status?
Yes. I started crying especially because my DACA expires in December. So I didn't really look into the details. So I just found out that he has passed it to Congress. So I was crying. I was like, oh my God, it expires. And then I lose my two jobs.
But as I understand it, you can apply for an extension of your...
Yeah, now after I got out of work and I was able to do more research and, you know, look up at the... announcement, I found out that I actually could renew, and I feel thankful for that. But at the same time, it's like it frustrates me and it confuses me and it leaves me in a place of uncertainty, because what's going to happen once, you know, my DACA does expire after I renew it, if it's accepted?
And Jose, obviously you talked about that uncertainty also. Are most of the students you talk to about this, are they in a situation where their permits will expire soon? Are they in a situation where they're already applying for extension?
or a lot of students are trying to figure out what are their options. And so there's no real clear definitive option, especially when they come to me or they ask or they talk about, you know, what is it that we can do from here? Like, how can we fix this? I only try to reassure students. It's not really my place to get, you know, on a political soapbox. So what I try to tell students is, it's not the end of the world, because now the government has to look at immigration reform. They have to do something to, quote unquote, fix this issue. From my position, it's really, I think, appropriate for me only to assure them that there is a process, and hopefully our leaders will do the right thing and start creating a process for them to work towards legal citizenship, to be legal in this country and to work and to do this the right way. I think everybody wants that. I mean, you hear a lot of rhetoric, but essentially what it comes down to is these are people with real lives, with, you know, real dreams, and it's really up to the government to start making the right choices here in allowing people the opportunity to become citizens.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kast, speaking with Jose Torres, who teaches in the Baltimore City Schools. He teaches at Falstaff Elementary Middle School now. And with Amy Elvira Maldonado, who came to the U.S. as a child and is currently covered by the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program. Amy, I saw you nodding while Jose Torres was speaking. I want to ask you about that. But first, why did your family leave Honduras?
The major reason why we left was because of the violence, the poverty. Honduras, a couple years ago, was the most dangerous place in the whole world. That's really why we came here, looking for better opportunities. And that is why many, you know, families come to this country, because they're looking for better lives, to provide better lives for their children, because they know in Central America or South America that it's really far out of our reach because of the gang violence, especially, and even our government, who doesn't provide the resources or the opportunities that this country does.
And so when President Obama created the DACA program, did you apply pretty much right away, and was it pretty straightforward getting accepted?
No. I didn't apply right away, and I think that's the case for many people, because we were afraid, because that we were handing out our information to, you know, immigration, and so we were really scared to do that. But after reassurance from some of the organizations, we decided that, you know, it was worth the risk. It would provide me a work permit, a social, which would allow me to work legally, and it would allow me eventually to get my license. My mom said it's worth the risk, you know, and if it's up to God for us to, you know, be deported, then, you know, we'll go.
So you got DACA status, you got the work permit, you're working these jobs. You also attended college for a while, right?
Yes, after I graduated from City, I went to Goucher College for a semester.
You intend to go back to college. I mean, that's part of why you're working, is to save money for college. Jose Torres, you said that you see your job as reassuring young people, not necessarily providing legal advice. On this point of whether people who have applied for DACA are now at risk because that information is presumably accessible to ICE, what assurance do you give, or what can you say about that?
Well, I know that as a school teacher, any kids that are on the school grounds, I will do whatever I need to do to protect them. I mean, that's what I think I'm supposed to do. Of course, I'm not going to get in the way of a government agency came in, but as far as I know, they're not doing that. They're not going to schools, as far as I know. And, you know, I became a school teacher, but when I became an ESOL teacher, I mean, I became an advocate for these kids. And I know that a lot of my colleagues share the sentiment that I'm really protective of the kids, but I'm limited to how far I can go. So as long as we're in school grounds, you know, I will do whatever I need to do to protect these kids, protect all the kids, really. But I mean, now I do try to talk to them about where do we go from here, and like, what's going to happen. Like, they ask me, these are very general questions. And I try to assure them that, you know, the one thing we shouldn't do is panic. We need to be vocal about it. You need to be involved, you know, be active in it, in the any protests or any activities that, that organizations put together to get the word out, to do any outreach. Those are the types of things we need to do. We need to make our voices heard, not just from the recipients, not just from immigrants, but from everyone in the community, to let our politicians and our leaders know that this is an important issue, that we cannot leave to, you know, the senators to figure out alone, that we need to give them some incentive to do it, because if not, we're going to have a nation on fire. You know, we're going to be a lot of people that are going to be upset about this. I mean, people should have at least a chance to be citizens. Give them a chance.
Amy, let me ask you the same question. What do you think your response and the response of other DACA recipients whom you know, what should the response be to this decision by the Trump administration?
I agree with Mr. Torres. We should be doing outreach. We should try to get involved, going to march, protest, you know, getting involved as much as we can to make our voice be heard, because that's how we're going to get something achieved. And I think the same thing. We shouldn't be afraid. We know we deserve this, and DACA was something that was promised to us, and now it's being taken away. Well, now we should fight stronger than ever, you know, and ask for something more permanent, because we can't be on temporary status, and then be with this uncertainty that sooner or later is going to be taken away from us again.
Jose Torres, you talked about pressuring Congress, making sure that representatives in Congress know how important this is. President Trump said he was timing the end of DACA to give Congress 6 months to take up immigration reform. Are you optimistic that they will be able to accomplish something that doesn't leave 800,000 young people in the lurch?
If there's one thing I'm in the business of, Sheila, is I'm in the business of optimism. I do that as a teacher. I do that as an advocate. I'm definitely optimistic. I'm not an expert on politics, but I watch like everyone else, and I'm very keen on the details. So I am optimistic that Congress will do something to at least begin the process. The path to citizenship, I think, is what we ultimately want. And so if we put the pressure on, they'll have to deliver, or at least defer it, defer the deferment, you know, at least postpone it or give an extension until they can figure it out. Because I know the country has a lot of other issues, a lot of pressing issues. So, but yes, I am optimistic. And I try to convey that to the families, too, so that they don't feel like, you know, it's, oh, in 6 months they're going to deport everybody. I tell them that's just not the way it's going to work.
Thank you very much for giving us this perspective on it. It's really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you.
Jose Torres teaches at Falstaff Elementary Middle School in Baltimore. Amy Elvira Maldonado is 20. She moved with her family to Baltimore from Honduras when she was 8 years old, and she is a recipient of DACA. Earlier, we spoke with Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch about a lawsuit his office has joined, along with California, Maine, and Minnesota, to challenge the rollback of DACA. Thanks for listening. On the Record, I'm Sheila Cast. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.